Eh bien, nous allons reprendre donc notre séminaire pour la dernière intervention sous cette forme d'aujourd'hui. Pour vous dire aussi qu'à 18h30, nous sommes attendus pour un sound walk sur ce qu'on appelle les petits Ramblas de Portbou. C'est juste la toute petite avenue qui est à côté de la plage. Et donc Pavlika nous attend là pour faire une marche sonore. We need to be at 6:30 near the beach to the little Ramblas, it's a little avenue. Pavlika waits for us at 6:30 for a sand walk, and you need your iPhone, your phone, mobile, and headphone. And if you have internet connection, it's good. If you haven't, we can open connection with other phones, other mobiles. So maintenant, nous allons profiter de la dimension européenne, continuer de profiter de la dimension européenne de notre contrat. We continue to travel in Europe. Today, now, with Rajko Mrzik, thank you. You come from Ljubljana, and you propose a talk about electronic media and listening comments in the early years of Radio Ljubljana. Thank you.
Thank you very much for introducing me, and I hope. It is not too much to say that I apologize to French speakers because I don't speak French and I have to speak in English. I will try to jump into the times of introduction of radio in Europe and somehow to think and rethink situations in which Walter Benjamin did his work at radio at approximately the same time. And I will try to speak about early years of Radio Ljubljana up to 1941-45 at the end of my presentation. Although, of course, I will not present deeply issues related to radio, but I was very much fascinated by radio in my own work from before. I participated in the establishment of one radio, and I was working on a radio for 10 years. So I know the media from inside and the way how it functions and how it attracts audience. And I was thinking about presenting some stuff I was recently doing on early popular music in Slovenia at the same time. So radio actually was the first device starting the so-called electronic age. At the beginning, it was designed two way of communication, which means you would have a receiver and you will have a transmitter and a receiver, and the transmitter and receivers were both functioning at the very beginning in the 90s of the 19th century. So these two ways or many ways connections are practically in use nowadays with radio. We call it telephone, mobile phone. But soon after, it was introduced as a kind of communicating device. There was, of course, an idea to transmit ideas, transmit speech, transmit, of course, music, and so on. Before the First World War, it started, of course, to develop, but the First World War actually changed the structure of media. And immediately after the First World War, we have got something we know nowadays as radio. So it is now, or let's say in the history, as radio itself, it was largely operating one way. But my perspective as anthropologist was, of course, how radio was received by audience. The way how we listen to radio does matter, and it did matter in the past as well. So listening to radio in its early years of functioning was Of course, as we have seen today, by registered radio receivers, we have got the numbers before, something like 2.5% of people would be able to listening to radio in the 30s. It was a very small minority of people who could have afforded buying a radio receiver proper and having a kind of registration for this radio in the period of time I'm speaking about, in the 20s and in the 30s. And of course, because of that matter, radio became a kind of a public device, which means if there was a wealthy owner of an inn or a hotel, he, mostly it was males, was considered to buy a radio for the audience, and the audience would come together and listen to this radio communally. So it was quite a common practice throughout Europe, not only in Slovenia. However, there was a third way of listening to radio, which is for me extremely important, because I came across this issue while doing fieldwork in the 90s, and I will show you a part of it later. It was individual listening using the so-called crystal detectors. It was a device I will show you a bit later that actually changed a bit a perspective we have about radio as a device. So radio is a kind of magical device, I have to say. It is emotional, it is deeply emotional, because it touches us by sound. I mean, literally touches us by sound. And I will just use this quotation by Wallace and Baron from 1990 about media. Radio and television are immediate emotional media. The emotional prerequisite for successful communication in the broadcast media means that news ideally should be both informative and dramatic if it is to grasp. If new consumers have high motivation to find out about an event, the emotional involvement is naturally established. So radio actually is a kind of an affective media. Although we have this strange idea, at least for me, that it is a cold media. Well, it's emotional in its matter. So Walter Ong would somehow write about issues of oral culture and written, or let's say literate culture, did not go into electronic culture proper, but still he would in this introduction to his work on oral and literature, they say that electronic processes engages social, economic, political, religious, and other structures. And here we come to Walter Benjamin and his work, because he was pretty much well aware of the functioning of media in the present, although, of course, we usually read his stuff on film and stars in film. So let us try to consider how sounds themselves are operating, and how we find ourselves with new kind of sounds. In older times, in oral culture, Walter Ong would say, well, sound exists only when it is going out of existence. Everybody knows those quotes, I guess, here. And what is important is in its social dimension, that sight isolates while sound incorporates. Well, okay. His further famous quote is that we are in the center of, let's say, auditory world. Is it so with radio? This is quite an important question, actually. Am I indeed a center of my auditory world while I am listening to radio? I am still in the center. Well, I still can hear sounds, but these sounds are transferred from some other place. They are schismogenetic in its essence, put from afar. And which kind of space actually I am at the moment of listening to radio occupying? Well, I'm not sure if I have an answer to this question, because it is part of magic of radio, as mentioning before. But this old orality is no more present when we are facing radio transmission. It changes dramatically and rapidly. It is something new, something like a negation of negation, to use Adorno's dialectics. So if we're listening together with others, this is something which was common in the past, of course, in oral cultures, but definitely not the same. But listening on my own, especially by using headphones, synchronized with other people who are doing the same at the same time, this issue does make a change. Not imagined community. It is experiential community without being aware that you are experiencing something that is basically the same. That you are put together in, let's say, a displaced place or deterritorialized territory, if I may use this Deleuzian way of thinking. It shifts radically. So this temporality of radio show is actually framed, fixed, although it is open. Even if we have open broadcast, it's always creating a kind of auditory space, kind of a new space. So listeners can turn it on and off and listen without visual distraction, which is, again, a specific advantage of radio itself. What is actually this deep emotion that is always related to listening to radio? It may be based on some character signals of radio stations, voice of interpreters in radio, or, of course, the whole environment which gives a space. So I will give an example from, again, my own field work from the past and, of course, history of media. Radio stations in former Yugoslavia were established a couple of years later than, of course, the German radio stations. We have to know that the way of transmitting signal was double at that time, short waves and middle waves. Middle waves had a range of, let's say, a couple of hundred kilometers in its best, while short waves were actually global at the beginning, although it was very difficult to hear and differentiate all these background noises from stratosphere. But the point is, these middle range radio stations actually started to work in the 20s, late 20s. In former Yugoslavia, Zagreb, Radio Zagreb was established in 1926. Radio Belgrade in 1927 and Radio Ljubljana in 1928. Part, I hope? Yes, it can work.
Tudi tu so imeli prste vmes.
Cool signal.
Slovensko znanje je sestavilo zapleten mehanizem, ki dela.
Dobro jutro. Radio Televizija Ljubljana, prvi radijski program. Ura je 4:30 minut.
Ah, this is it. So, even me, I was quite sure that it was a recorded bird. You know, cuckoo bird. No, it was not. It was a mechanical device. Designed by technicians in the late 20s, early 30s, something like that. And it remained for decades as a part of characteristic signal of Radio Ljubljana. I'm not sure if people from Radio Ljubljana would know, is it still in use or not? I mean, the recording. So when I mentioned my personal experience while doing field work, my interlocutor Ivan Finch, a peasant and a worker, from a small village, I was doing fieldwork in the 90s, spoke about this fascination with radio in the soon after war period of time. It was so kind, you can't imagine. Cuckoo, for 1 minute, he speaks Radio Ljubljana. So a person in a kind of a remote village at the Slovenian countryside would remember listening to Radio Ljubljana with this cuckoo sign. And his voice, when he was talking to me, was very much emotional. I didn't make a recording, but I still remember his voice. It was not just an ordinary expression when you talk to people. It was really emotional voice. And the way how he listened to radio was specific. I mentioned before crystal detector. Here is just a picture of such a crystal detector from, of course, Wikipedia, English Wikipedia. And you can see the lines above. The crystal radio became a cheap alternative radio for youth and the poor in the 20s. Well, this is British context. And it was similar across Europe. So people who were not wealthy enough to buy a proper radio receiver at that time, but who were interested to listen to radio, would simply try to find this alternative solution. It is a very simple device with semiconductor crystal, and you have to have a wire. You get, of course, this electricity from, of course, transmission, and it works without electricity and without batteries as a device. It is important, so it is autonomous, and you can listen to by headphones if you have those headphones. You can see headphones on the right, and it was quite common to use these kind of devices. And this is why I am using these listening commons as an expression for this. I will define it immediately. So this listening commons is this active part of audience actively engaged in this electronic media, not as registered owners of radio receivers, but people who engage in active listening. For example, collective listening together, and of course engaged in this individual listening. And they would, of course, have influence on radio program and format of radio later, because they had a kind of an idea what I need from radio, and they would definitely become much more engaged into this. So, for example, as a part of my initial studies in the history of Slovenian popular music, although I'm still at the beginning of this process, I was reading and checking the Radio Ljubljana publication, which is quite a typical publication for media, starting in 1929, 2 years after the establishment of radio station. It was related to Radio Ljubljana, but it was at the same time something that was created by supporters of media, and you can see this. The first issue of this journal, which is very much modern way from the late 20s. So at the end of the testimony, to go back to the village of a person I was speaking about, he would say Ivan Fingst, who was a kid, younger kid in the late 40s. He was speaking about his blind neighbor bestowed of him super nice detector from Austria. It was small, round detector, factory made, the most beautiful in the village, which means, of course, it was not the only one in the village. You were able to search for radio station, for various stations. You could not find anything like that with us. So it was field notes from Trate. So this is the guy, Ivan Fingst, when he got his first tractor. He was very proud of it in 1966. He was still a young guy in 1966. And I was quite shocked when I found out at a kind of this internet selling platform in Slovenia that somebody would sell this kind of very advanced radio detector, and the price is quite high, if you can see, 99 euros. Example I can share with you of using this detector, a crystal detector, comes from a person who unfortunately died, I don't know exactly this year or last year. She was almost 100 years old, 99, and she was the youngest person in Streeter family, which was famous in the 30s as a Streeter tercet in Slovenian, so it was a trio, sisters Streeter, and with her it was quartet. And her name was, please help me now. Zora, yes, I didn't remember the name, Zora Konyaev. And she has a very specific personal history, I have to say. And it was a radio show by Sashka and her colleague. So she told, I will play at the end of this. She told us what is said
here. Nismo imeli, potem pa je Nada od nekod prinesla majčken detektor na kristal z enimi slušalkami radija. Nismo imeli, potem pa je Nada od nekod prinesla majčken detektor na kristal z enimi slušalkami, ki smo si...
I don't know what happened.
Jih razdelili na dvoje in je vsaka z eno slušalko poslušala.
I was trying to make a stop.
Ko sem iz Ljubljanske opere...
So basically, I wanted just to hear her voice when she was speaking about her experience. Last year, I think it was 2020, if I remember correctly, when she was 98 years old, something like that. She explained, we did not own the radio receiver. And then my sister Nada, one of the members of this trio, brought from somewhere a small detector with a crystal and one headphone set. We share these headphones and listen by one ear. And I remember how I was fascinated by listening to Carmen from the Ljubljana Opera House. They did, of course, provide live opera and other events. Since we were listening together, we had to go to bed together and listen to this radio, which I don't believe it was unusual situation for younger people at that time. So the kids and younger people would be attracted by media, and they found a solution how to listen to media, which is important for, of course, our friend, because I will later just explain why youth, children, and younger people are so much important in this regard. So again, this is a trio. Streeter, they sang at radio regularly, from jazz up to folk music, or let's say traditional music, and opera and some other issues. This Nada, I think Nada was became later an opera singer, actually quite a famous opera singer in Slovenia. There is, of course, as I mentioned before, the touch of reality related to this. Sound is the touch from distance. It is the very first touch of reality, and Fernald would mention. But is the radio broadcast the same kind of touch of reality as sound proper? This is another issue in as we have to put a big question mark in it. And in childhood reality, how much does it shape the world of children? Of course, in radio program in Ljubljana, I see it is 23 minutes, but I still have 5 minutes, I guess, to come to the end. There was, of course, a part of children, youth, and entertainment program. The first redactor for this program at Radio Ljubljana before the war was quite famous ethnologist, for that matter, Niko Kuret, who later became ethnologist, but he started as a kind of person working in radio. And among other shows, there were some the radio games, radio plays actually produced. And I was quite shocked realizing that he used the term sound games or sound plays. Well, it's very difficult to translate. It is more sound plays, plays than sound games. But let's say that it was very similar. Of course, they took it from German radio as an idea, or from other radio stations. But of course, all these radio stations would produce these kind of shows for the audience related to younger kids. So this is something something from the 30s. I will show you just a detail from 1933. But my point is that when the audience is somehow making these claims back to the radio, in all European radio stations, they kind of invented or pushed forward for the show in which you would opt for your songs, you would opt for the best songs, and you would opt for something that you can push as a wishes to people who would listen to radio. And although it is a radio show which has a kind of, at least in Slovenia, ambivalent view, it is still one of the most important shows at radio. I don't know how much it operates nowadays, but I guess it is still operating. So you can see the listeners' claims show, kar želite, to dobite, whatever you like, you will get. Literally, starting in the 30s, I didn't get the first emission of this show, but at least I have an example from 1938. Of this show, and you can see here on the right. Well, not the whole slide is available, but there is a very very varied. There is absolutely no logic in this. Of course, people's tastes are various. Of course, and some of them would simply say, I would prefer opera, some other would say couplet, or some other would say jazz song, or some other would say just polka and waltz. And this is the way how all these, let's say, ethnopop, if I may use this wider term, actually developed in pre-war period of time in specific European countries. In Slovenian case, it was polka and accordion, rhythmical playing of accordion. And here is just one example of a show, 1933, starting with records, then news, and again records, and then the lecture, funny lecture, as a matter of fact, and then something from traditional Slovenian, myth of, or let's say, stories on good and evil, and then we have concert of radio orchestra, and then we have accordion duel with two accordions at that time, and at the end again news and the end of the transmission in 1933. This is November 25th, 1933. Was radio orchestra playing jazz, radio jazz. So this was a kind of. Kind of an orchestra. But now to finish these ideas about childhood and importance of radio media for children and youth, and why Walter Benjamin was doing this show. Of course, we know he had to earn some money. This was the basic motive why he did and he produced his work for Radio Frankfurt and Berlin. But at the same time, he was very much aware that children and youth is the audience every revolutionary movement have to start with. So from one other part of his work, this is a program for proletarian children's theater from 1928. He was very clear and explicit about it. Every proletarian movement, whenever it has for once escaped the format of parliamentary debate, finds itself confronting many different forces for which it is unprepared. The most powerful of these, as well as the most dangerous, is the younger generation. He was, of course, we have to understand that Walter Benjamin was a part of the so-called youth movement in Germany, a very famous youth movement which started before the First World War and, let's say, at the beginning of the 20th century, very much romantic, but very close to something that hippism in the 60s actually was. So going back to nature and trying to find alternative in life and so on and so forth. So the self-confidence of this parliamentary tedium springs from the fact that a parliament is a monopoly of adults. Mere catchphrases have no power over children. True, in a year you can make sure that children are parroting them throughout the country. But the question is how to make sure that the party program is acted on in 10 or 20 years. And catchphrases will not have the slightest effect on this. So this is the reason why proletarian, let's say, intellectuals have to work with children in terms of building a revolution, actually. And this is basically the main point or missing link, in a way, we have to provide here. So I will finish my presentation for today with an example how you turn radio backward and how you use a radio as a weapon, not only as a tool, a weapon against fascism. So it happened in Ljubljana during the occupation in 1941, that the radio station, literally called Radio Screamer, Radio Kričač, was made by people who were capable of doing radio program under the occupation, alternative, of course, illegal radio by the Liberation Front. So this radio screamer transmitted 15 minutes shows between November 17th, 1941, and April 5th, 1942, from 23 different locations in the town of Ljubljana. At that time, Ljubljana was surrounded by a wire, because the occupiers were Italians for Ljubljana. I mean Italy, fascist Italy. So they built a fence around Ljubljana to prevent people from communicating with partisans in the forest. So they were very smart and never caught. So what the occupiers did to prevent this transmission of radio shows, imagine what they did. They seized all registered radio receivers. This is what they actually did. And it was a huge win for the early years of partisan resistance. One of the most brilliant, activities during the Second World War in occupied territories. They won. They actually won this symbolic battle. So at the end of the war, I mean, when Italy declared its failure in war in 1943, what is the term in it? Capitulation of Italy. After the capitulation of Italy, of course, things changed, and they established a new radio station which permanently transmitted a signal at liberated territory in southern Slovenia called Radio Liberation Front. And of course, another part of this anti-fascist propaganda worked pretty much well. So it is not one-way process. So radio itself is two ways or many-fold ways of process, and it is not something we should leave to capital, to the state, or any other authority available. We always have an opportunity to fight back, and Walter Benjamin showed us that it is possible without proletarian propaganda to push forward at least a bit this general awareness in the society. So this is what I had to say for today.
Thank you. Merci. Merci beaucoup. C'est un exemple qui est à la fois rare pour nous, mais qui résonne aussi évidemment avec l'histoire de chaque pays, puisque je pense qu'on aurait comme une archéologie de l'usage de la radio avant et pendant et après la Seconde Guerre mondiale, just before and during and after the Second Civil War. For each country, you have a lot of radio stories. And it's very interesting to consider ce que la radio peut, what can the radio do when the city, when the country, when the people need to communicate. And we can have some questions. Please, Laurence.
I just have a question about the crystal radio. Non, ça fait un son bizarre. Ok, pour la qualité du son. So, if do we need to understand that the crystal radio is especially a tool of political resistance? So not only radio, but the crystal radio. And what is the role of this crystal radio in the latest events you just explained?
Well, it is not actually. My point was that we always miss this part of audience who was poor and who was younger, that they use alternative way to listen to radio, just normal radio. In this example of in 1941, of course, this crystal radio was not an issue at all after the regular radio receivers were seized. Because each owner of radio receiver before the war had to declare and register his or her receiver owned. There was a registration and the list of registered users of radio. It was impossible to buy radio without being registered at that time. So the authorities had, main radio station had this. I guess these crystal detectors might have some meaningful way of listening to transmission of a signal of, let's say, radio stations from Great Britain in France, for example, for the resistance movement. I guess it was the case, or even in Germany, to listen to non-German radio stations at that time. But not in this resistance movement, in partisan movement. Not specific, I wouldn't say so.
No, just a question and a quick note. Rajko, if you maybe know about Coca-Cola radio, did you ever hear about that?
No.
It was a friend of mine was telling me, I just remembered, at the end of 80s, in Slovenia, there were radios made from Coca-Cola can. Mm-hmm. And it was in the similar fashion of resistance radio because the communist system in Slovenia was finishing. So, that was one way of trying to find an alternative source of communication. And so, but I will look it up. I will maybe ask my friend again, but I just remember I memorized the name. It was obvious, but it was made from Coca-Cola can, and it was called Coca-Cola Radio.
So. Yeah, there are still many illegal radio stations, very much limited to one place. So there are quite a lot of people who are producing these kind of shows for one apartment building or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's a lot of this.
Yeah, it was the same thing. It was on a few parts, and they were trying to find them. Police was looking for them, and so on. Yeah. So.
Thanks. One question. Thank you for sharing the story of the radio Kričač. A couple of years back, I read a book called Islands of Resistance. It's about Canadian illegal radio stations. And it turned out that nowadays you can get a decent radio transmitter for just a few bucks or just a few euros. and it's about the size of a cigarette pack. So it's very, very handy to move around and send whatever program you want to send. So do you have knowledge on this? Is this kind of devices used anymore, or are people interested in this kind of devices, or is other youngsters forever lost in the internet nowadays?
Well, as far as younger generation at the moment are concerned, I have absolutely no idea, no clue about it, but I guess at least some of them are experimenting. There are experiments going on, especially by artists. Artists are doing a lot of this kind of events, but to have this kind of overview, I don't. What is attractive for me is that at least a couple of years ago, some of my friends would still listen to shortwave radio, which is not a common idea anymore. Having quite a complicated radio receiver for short waves.
Just a well, in my search on this DIY stuff and how to build a DIY transmitter and receiver, I found out that in Greece, actually, the crystal itself is a controlled substance, and it's considered to be military.
Nowadays.
Uh-huh. I think this outcome of the 80s pirate radio movement in Athens and elsewhere, and the need to control all the radioscape. So that's also another thing. I think the fact that it's heavily monitored, and you cannot buy it out in the market, is also an index of how this thing needs to be somehow controlled. Mm-hmm. Needs by the authorities, anyway. And I don't know if you can find the crystals now elsewhere. If it's
I don't know. I just made this historical overview, not the present. But for me personally, when I spoke to this guy, Ivan Finch, for the first time, I was quite surprised. I didn't know nothing about it at that moment.
Can I say something? Hello, thank you. I'm wondering, maybe the movements, the youth movements that you were saying and you were all mentioning, could we now have moved towards practices of offline networks with Raspberry Pi and this sort of media that are used in various ways? So maybe there is a shift there to the practice, I guess, of the medium.
Yeah. And I guess we researchers have to listen to younger kids, although I'm not doing that, unfortunately.
Maybe you spoke about that already this morning. You said radio was magical. So is it magical because the person or the music you hear is coming from an invisible sound, or is it because it's new?
It is no more new because we have 100 years of experience living with radio. But there is a point in this. It is a detachment of the source of a voice. The voice itself has a kind of deeper, not meaning, but attraction. And if you can't see or experience the source of the voice from the space, it is very similar to what we have in Old Testament, when the God himself always revealed to prophets by voice. And this is something magical, I have to say. It works. It simply works. It has an effect. This is what I had in mind, saying the magic of radio.
I speak in French, I'm sorry, but à ce propos, nous avons développé au Cresson un effet sonore qu'on avait appelé l'effet d'ubiquité, sur lequel j'avais travaillé personnellement, et ça renvoie exactement à ce que vous venez de dire, c'est-à-dire que l'effet d'ubiquité sonore, c'est l'effet du son qui vient de partout et nulle part à la fois. Et du coup, c'est par exemple la voix de Dieu. Et ceci renvoie à des tas de choses dans des mondes différents, mais par exemple dans le monde de l'architecture, on va constater que la grande cathédrale ou le grand temple émet un son ubiquitaire, c'est-à-dire la voix de celui qui parle, qui prêche, ben, ne vient de nulle part et partout est à la fois, et donc est une expression de la voix de Dieu, qui est par conséquent un lieu de pouvoir. Et on va le retrouver dans tout un tas d'architectures monumentales qui ont des espaces extrêmement réverbérants, où il y a des effets qui sont plus que des effets de réverbération, mais vraiment des effets ubiquitaires, parce qu'il y a des temps de réverbération importants, et que c'est toujours une expression de pouvoir, depuis le palais de justice, le temple, mais l'aula universitaire du 19e siècle, etc. etc. Et donc ça renvoie aussi à cette dimension du magique et du pouvoir. Évidemment, au moment où il y a surgissement et où la technologie est nouvelle, c'est un pouvoir ubiquitaire, mais hors espace, quoi. Donc, ça renvoie exactement à ce que vous disiez.
I think I did understand at least the yes in space and spatial experience. And of course, it was even prehistorical way of detachment from voice and listening to a voice. And these are experiments. Done today, and maybe I will add philosophy, early philosophy, because it is not a common knowledge that earlier philosophers who taught, I don't know if it was Aristotelian, Platon school of philosophy, they were, the teachers were behind the fence speaking to students. In this early philosophy, I don't remember exactly details about it, but it was, you didn't observe somebody who was speaking. You were just listening to the voice of a philosopher. It was Plato's Academia, I guess, but I'm not sure. And Pythagoras? Yeah.
So it's the end of our seminar for this place, and thank you. And now.